Chapter 25. The Early Bird Gets the Earworm. I wake up the next morning with a pit of dread still in my belly. Rolling out of bed, I'm met by my own reflection in the mirror. Messy red hair, tired eyes, rumpled shirt and jeans because I didn't change clothes last night, just tumbled into bed exhausted. Jai might have melted all the ice on campus, but it had left everything soaked through, including our beds and clothes and the carpet. Luckily, everyone's instruments were protected by moisture-repellent wards. Every musician I know, myself included, is paranoid about damage, so we all routinely refresh the protective wards every time we clean our instruments. A few simple spells is all it takes to guard them from most types of damage for a few weeks. But there was still a ton of work to do to clean up. I'd spent hours playing drying spells alongside the other seventh grade girls, slowly leaching the water from the first floor of the dorm. The going theory among the students is that Sousa somehow orchestrated the ice spell, literally. Trevor led a whole group on a hike through the Echo Wood to try to find evidence, but nothing turned up. Of course, I know the answer, and so does Jai. I told him everything, including how Mia now knows about our trip to the Midnight Orchestra, the Necromuse, all of it. "I can't believe Dobby turned on us like that," he said at dinner last night when I told him everything. "This is my fault. I trusted her." We both did. "If the Necromuse really did freeze over Mistwick, what do you think he'll do next?" I have no idea, and it's all I can think about. How long will he wait before he strikes again? Even walking from one class to the next, I paused at every corner, scared of what might be hiding around it. This morning is no different. It's after 7, but the hallway is quiet. Usually, girls are lining up for showers by now, yelling up and down the dorm. Weird. Where is everyone? My stomach sinking, I go from door to door, peeking in. All the rooms are empty, beds messy and unmade. Phoebe will have a fit when she sees. The last room I come to is Darby and Mia's. I pause a minute in the doorway and stare at the pictures they've hung on strings across the walls. Lots of shots of the two of them, going all the way back to preschool. What must it be like to have a friend so close you're like sisters through all those years? Someone you can trust to always have your back, always keep your secrets. Someone you'd betray everyone else for. Feeling guilty for snooping, I start to back away. But then I realize that Darby's bed is unmade. Well, they both are, but it's Darby's that strikes me as weird. She's the neatest person I know. Her bed is perfectly remade almost even before she rolls out of it in the morning. Darby would never leave her room like this unless something was very wrong. I run back down the hallway and burst through the outside door. The morning air is frigid, and fog wraps around the buildings and trees. It looks like a hazy dream world. And in that fog, shadows move around. Teeth clenched, I creep closer. My skin crawls with the sense of wrongness permeating the air. The first shadow turns out to be Phoebe. "Hey," I shout, breaking into a run. "Phoebe, what's going on? Why?" My voice dies when I see the shovel in Phoebe's hand. There's a groundskeeping shed next to the dorm, and the door hangs open, tools scattered around like someone's been digging through them in a frenzy. Phoebe is digging a hole in the hard, frozen dirt, her lips blue from the cold, but her face and shirt damp with sweat. She's still in her pajamas, and judging by the size of the hole, she's been at this for hours. Horror drags at my stomach when I see the shape of the hole she's dug, a rectangle, about 8 feet long and 2 feet wide. A grave. "Phoebe? Phoebe, what are you doing?" She doesn't answer or even look at me. I don't think she can hear me. Her eyes are glazed and she doesn't stop digging. I run past her to the next shadow, Claudia. Behind her are Jingfei and Darby. They're all digging. Claudia and Jingfei have small gardening trowels, and their holes are not nearly as deep as Phoebe's, but they're still undeniably grave-shaped. Darby has a pickaxe and is driving it so hard into the dirt, her hands are blistered. I tried to wrestle the pickaxe away, but without saying a word or even looking at me, she shoves me so hard I fall onto the wet soil. Her next swing of the axe comes straight for my head. I scream and roll aside just before the sharp blade buries into the soil. Stop! Darby! Can you hear me? Blank-faced, she hacks at the soil again. I run on, past more girls digging with anything they could get their hands on. A few are even using metal spoons, their holes little more than an inch deep, but they scrape away at the dirt determinedly, moving it teaspoon by teaspoon. From her muddy wheelchair, Victoria swings a sharp hoe, slamming it into the ground and sending sprays of dirt flying. Like everyone else, her face is completely blank. What is going on? It's like walking through a nightmare. I wander all over the school grounds, and everywhere I go, I find more students digging holes. The boys are out here too, having raided another one of the groundskeeping sheds or using kitchen utensils. Nauseated and shaking, I make my way uphill to Clarion House, where the maestros, teachers, and staff live. And sure enough, all the adults are outside too, digging away in their pajamas and house coats and slippers. I run to Miss Norani, Mr. Pinwhistle, even Miss Mott. But none stir from their trances, not even when I shake them. They just push me away and keep digging. Whatever spell has trapped the entire student body and faculty, it's a powerful one. The weird thing is, I don't hear any music. I haven't heard a single strain of melody since I woke up. And to be under such a strong enchantment, a person has to be able to hear the spell being played. It's as if everyone is listening to music that I alone can't hear. But that makes no sense. Mrs. LaRue! I spot the headmaestro beneath a large maple tree, digging with a trowel. She ignores me and chops at a root with the blade. Jai. I have to find Jai. Running back down the hill, I search the crowd of boys until I find him. He's by the lake, up to his knees in mud. He's digging with a pitchfork, which I eye nervously as I edge closer. Jai? I approach him as if he's an angry cobra. Nod your head, or blink, or something, to show you can hear me. He slings a pile of dirt that spatters my pajamas. Spitting out a clod, I draw a deep breath, bounce on my feet a moment, and then I dart in and seize the pitchfork. Yanking it out of his hands, I hurl it into the lake with a big splash. Jai immediately bends over and starts digging with his fingernails. Stop it! Stop! 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 With a wild yell, I tackle him to the ground and pin him. He struggles wordlessly, his eyes still glazed, trying to scratch at the soil. Jai, wake up! Please, please, just snap out of it! I can barely breathe for the terror filling my lungs. Who did this to you? How did they do this to you? And then I see it. A faint glow deep inside his ear. What on earth? He twists, trying to throw me off, and I have to grab his hair to keep him from headbutting me. Keep still, Jai. There's something in your... Oh my gosh. A skinny, squirmy thing reaches out of his ear, like an eel in a coral reef. I nearly puke all over Jai then and there. It's a worm, pale white and wriggling. And it is glowing, clearly the source of whatever magic has Jai entranced. Which means I've got to pull it out. Ugh, gross, 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 gross. I grab the worm, trying not to hurl when I feel its slimy body wriggling in protest. Then, carefully, I begin pulling it out. It's nearly as long as my index finger, and about half as thick. It resists me, trying to burrow back into Jai's ear. Gagging, I have to give it a sharp little tug to finally detach it from his ear canal. Then it slithers out all at once, writhing between my fingertips. Disgusted, I hold it up to my face until I can hear the faintest thread of sound coming from its body, like the chirp of a cricket, but more musical. At once, fog starts to collect in my brain, the magic at work. Jumping away from Jai, I hurl the worm to the ground and crush it with my shoe. Then, for good measure, I grab a rock and smash it until it's pulverized. Breathing hard, I look back at Jai and see him blinking away the haze in his eyes. He sits up, stares at me, at the fresh grave he's lying in, at the mud on his clothes, and he screams. It's okay. I toss the rock away. It's okay, Jai. You're safe now. He sucks in breaths like he's been underwater too long. What's happening? Where am I? Is this a grave? His horrified eyes fix on me. Amelia, did I die? No, but I nearly did trying to save you. I brush dirt off my hands and help him up. You are under a spell. Everyone is. I gesture at the other students around us, still digging away. Jai stares for a long moment, taking it in. What? But how? I point to the smashed worm. This was in your ear, and I pulled it out with my bare fingers. He crouches down and squints at the worm, then shudders. Well, that's positively horrifying. You don't have to tell me. Do you know what it is? He nods. It's an earworm. They're incredibly rare. Earworm? They're sort of like hum frogs in that they can repeat simple melodies. So if you put them in someone's ear, say, while they're sleeping, they can control the person for as long as they are in there. Ugh! He stands up and kicks dirt over the worm, then looks around at the other students. Now what? That's a lot of earworms. I got it. He snaps his fingers. I remember watching a documentary about these things when I was little. Apparently, the whole colony is controlled by one worm, the queen worm. Kind of like bees or ants. She transmits the melody the other worms repeat. So if we find her and smush her, the whole spell breaks. He nods. Except, we have no idea where she is, I point out. And it's just a matter of time before one of these kids really gets hurt. My stomach turns over as I realize what we have to do next. He seems to have the same thought, and he grimaces. So, it's gotta be the hard way then. Better suck it up and get it over with. We split up and go to the nearest students. Before we can pull out the earworms, we have to wrestle them to the ground, take away their digging tools, and get them still enough to reach into their ears. I hear Jai moaning and retching as he extracts his first one, freeing George from the spell. I take care of Colin Brunnings, quickly tell him what happened, and while he's still reeling in bewilderment, push him toward an upperclassman at the next grave. In this way, we slowly free the students, each newly awakened one stumbling off to help someone else. Screams of horror sound all over the campus with each newly freed person, along with gagging from the students trying to extract the worms from their classmates' ears. In front of Harmony Hall, Jai and I run into Darby and Mia, newly freed from the spell. Both girls are covered in dirt, their faces pale. For a moment, we just stare at one another, Mia glaring, Jai glaring back, Darby looking dazed. Then Mia pushes Darby along, muttering in her ear. Someone must have started rescuing the maestros, because the adults now flood the campus, trying to get control of the situation. Miss Mott approaches the four of us. Everyone okay? She asks, looking frazzled. Her silk pajamas are ruined by the mud, and her black hair is in a tangle. Back to your dorms to shower and change, then meet in the shell for an emergency assembly. She starts walking away, then pauses and glances back. Amelia? You don't know anything about this, do you? I freeze. She couldn't possibly be suspicious, could she? Guilt floods through me. I can't keep hiding this. I have to tell the truth before someone gets seriously hurt. But before I can say anything, Mia interrupts. This is outrageous, she says. My lawyers will hear all about this. Miss Mott sighs, a hand to her temple. Mercy, child. Let's just get through the day, please, before we start filing lawsuits. Go back to your dorm, students, and clean up while we sort this out. Come on, Jai says, tugging my sleeve. He whispers, consequence number two, you think? It has to be. Why else would I be the only person not affected? This is a message for me. Couldn't he have just written in blood on your mirror or left a dead rat on your pillow like a normal bad guy? Grumbles Jai. You really know how to pick your enemies, Amelia Jones. I sigh. We split up at the top of the hill to head to our own dorms. Most everyone's awake now, stumbling around with horrified expressions. A few kids are crying loudly, and Miss March gathers them up and takes them to her nurse's office. Amelia! Darby corners me the moment I step inside. She's a mess, with leaves in her hair and mud up to her elbows. Amelia, this has to be him, right? What are we going to... We, I ask. We? There's no we, Darby. Not after what you did. What I did? She blinks. What are you talking about? I shake my head, tired of the game as she and Mia are playing with my head. I'm tired of trying to be friends with people who just want to use me for their personal joke. Pushing past her, I shove open my own door and resist the urge to throw myself onto the bed. I'm covered in mud head to toe. Even my hair is clotted with dirt. But as I bend down to peel off my filthy socks, I notice a black card resting on my pillow, along with another dead rose. I pick the note up resignedly. Silver lettering is now all too familiar. You owe me a spell, Amelia Jones. This is your final warning.